Okay, so thanks for the invitation to speak here. Okay. All right, I'm going to talk about some recent work on the thermal Hall effect. The title is a bit ambitious on correlated materials, and I was hoping to say something about the material we just heard about, but actually I'll only talk about the cuprates, where there's still you know, many interesting open questions. So the talk is motivated largely by this paper by the Taillefer group, who looked at the thermal Hall effect in a variety of cuprate compounds. And so looking at this, so this is color-coded. So if you're in the overdoped side, and you go down the green line in temperature, this is the thermal Hall effect here. And what they noticed, and this particular region here, as I'll show you later, seems to track the Wiedemann-Franz law. It essentially seems to be just given by a Fermi liquid-like term for the thermal Hall effect. But as they go under doping, they see a decrease in kappa xy, which does not obey the Wiedemann-Franz law. There's no corresponding decrease in sigma xy. And well, most remarkably, this decrease, in fact, becomes maximal as you lower the temperature already in the insulator. That's the brown curve over there. So in the insulator, they get quite a large thermal Hall conductivity down to relatively low temperatures. Now, I don't, if this really stayed non-zero down to T equals zero, well, that would be a dramatic revolution in physics, and we have a whole different type of probably topological state even in the insulating cuprates. I don't think anybody believes that's the case. So at low enough temperature, this is going to come around and go back down to zero, at least in the insulator. And I believe from Louis there are some indications in the experiments that's happening. All right, so these are the experiments that we want to understand. Here's two other plots. So this is just in the insulator. This is the decrease in kappa xy as a function of temperature that I just emphasized. Now, if you take this value here and write it in terms of per layer, then the natural unit of kappa xy over temperature, as we saw in the previous talk, is pi squared over 6. That's the value for a topological state with central charge C equals 1, and the value being measured in ruthenium chloride is half of that, at least in the Matsuda et al. Experiments. So this value in those units, in the units where the ruthenium chloride would be 1/4, this value is 1, so which is quite large in an insulating compound. So we are going to present a somewhat optimistic theory on how this could arise. And it's a pure spin model. And in that spin model, we won't get all the way up to 1, but we can, with some good luck, get all the way up to 1/2. So really, I don't have a complete theory of this, but I think I'm optimistic that the ideas I'm going to present will be ingredients in the final theory. Maybe you have to put in phonon contributions or some phonon-assisted effect to get the full observations. But I won't consider phonons in my discussion. All right, so this is work with several people. Matthias Schorer is a postdoc at Harvard. Chen Ke, you all know. The other three are my students. Now, of course, Xu Baiyu is a postdoc at Berkeley. All right, so let me just tell you the main results of our work. And so we don't claim that there's any exotic state in the insulating cuprates. The ground state is just a conventional Nail state. But we make a certain assumption that if you were to apply a large orbital magnetic field perpendicular to the layer, by orbital field, I mean a field that just couples to the charge motion of the electrons. Of course, we know an actual field also couples to the Zeeman term, but I want to somehow put G factor equal to zero. So if I'm able to do this, as a theorist I can, I will include the Zeeman term in my computations. But eventually, we believe there will be a transition to a state which has the same topological order as the chiral spin liquid. This is the liquid state that was originally proposed by Kalmayer and Laughlin in the early days of the cuprates. But in this case, it'll be coexisting, initially anyway, with the Nail order. So there can be a state where the spin liquid character, meaning the topology of the excitations, coexists with the spin waves of the Nail order. Okay, and so what we are going to, now we don't assume that the fields that are actually applied in the experiments are large enough to go across this transition, but they bring us somewhat close to it. That's our main assumptions. And once we assume that, I'll show you that the temperature and the field dependence of everything that's observed is very consistent with our computations for the vicinity of this quantum phase transition. Okay, so that's the main result in case you get lost. And then I will also say something about the doped case. That's just ongoing work where the issues are even more puzzling. Okay, so let me just begin by talking about the insulator. So let me just say the, you know, make the basic point. If I just take a nail antiferromagnet, nearest neighbor exchange on the square lattice, then I apply an external magnetic field. Well, the magnetic field will have a Zeeman term, which, you know, is detrimental to any interesting thermal Hall effects by itself. But it also introduces this kind of spin chirality term. It's weak, you know, it could be only a thousandth of the J in the laboratory fields that you're studying. But, you know, let's imagine that for some reason its effects are enhanced. But if it's, you know, so this term will be induced anytime you apply a field. Just the fact that the magnetic field breaks time reversal and reflections is enough to induce this term. All right, so you could put this term in and say, okay, view that as a small perturbation of this, which it is, naively. So you put this term in, and then you go in and compute the thermal Hall effect, and what you find is just given by the Berry curvature of the spin waves. And the spin waves acquire a small Berry curvature because of this J chi term. And so that gives you then a thermal Hall effect, but you find any perturbative spin wave calculation to be much smaller than this unit, kb squared over h bar. You know, it's suppressed by factors of 1 over j, and these small perturbation, some high power of it as temperature goes to zero. So this just by itself, this theory can't do it. But so our idea is that, well, let's imagine for some reason we can't just do a naive perturbation theory in j chi. So let's, could it be that even a small j chi could have a large effect? And that's the question we're going to answer in the affirmative. So there's one place where there's a reasonable chance that's indeed true. So if I take the Heisenberg model on the square lattice, but include first and second neighbor interactions, then as a function of J2, we know that you go from the nail state to this valence bond solid. This is a spin gap state where the spins just form singlets. And I want to focus now on the vicinity of this critical point, which has been the focus of many studies over the past two decades or more. So this is a, you know, a canonical example of what of deconfined criticality. And there's a proposed theory of spin-ons. In this case, these are bosonic spin-ons, which fractionalize the nail order. And when you do this fractionalization, these spin-on variables become the right sort of variables to talk about this phase transition. And this fractionalization also introduces an emergent gauge field. And so you also have to worry about the gauge fluctuations. And those eventually on the other side of the transition lead to some kind of broken symmetry. But I'm interested in, you know, what would happen if I applied an orbital magnetic field near this critical point. Now, naively, if you take this particular theory, it again seems like it will have not much effect. But this is a strongly coupled theory. We don't really know much about it, so we can only examine it in certain large n approximations. So it might be useful to take other pictures of this critical point. So one of the interesting developments in the last few years has been the realization that many of these strongly coupled critical points in 2 plus 1 dimensions have dual formulation. They're exactly dual to other theories. And this is in the spirit of the Kramers-Vanier duality of the 2D Ising model, but much more sophisticated, really, and took the efforts of many people from different fields for this body of knowledge to emerge. And in particular, for this case, this particular field theory that was written down long ago for the deconfined critical point on the square lattice antiferromagnet is now believed to be dual to another theory, in this case involving fermions, Dirac fermions, two species of them actually, that's the NF equals 2, coupled to an SU2 gauge field. All right, well, so if this critical point existed, then the claim is that these two theories are exactly dual to, they're the same critical point, they're just two different descriptions. But for our purposes, for the purpose of computing the thermal Hall effect, this particular description turns out to be much more convenient. In particular, what happened there? Oh, sorry, yeah, this, I just put the flavors in here. So before I get to that, let me just give you some evidence that this fermionic representation of this phase transition may be a better one to compute things. In particular, one property of this fermionic representation is that there's an emergent global symmetry. It turns out to be a SO5 symmetry between the nail order parameter and the valence bond solid order parameter. And there's numerical evidence, in particular this work by Adam Naum et al., for this SO5 symmetry. Anyway, so now what I want to do is to go back to this phase transition between the nail and the VBS state and apply this J-chi term. So I have a J1 and a J2, and now this axis along this line is going to become J-chi. So I add the J-chi here. And so it turns out in this fermionic formulation, that's very simple to add it. It's just a mass term for the fermions. And now if I ignore the gauge field, this is certainly a relevant term. You have Dirac fermions that acquire a mass, you will open up a gap, and in fact, you get an interesting state. In this case, it's exactly the chiral spin liquid. Now, we don't know for sure that's the answer, but I'm going to assume that's correct, because the gauge field could render this term irrelevant, but let's assume it's relevant. So if it's relevant, then you have the remarkable feature that at least at this one point, even an infinitesimal J-chi is actually a strong perturbation. It'll completely change the value of the thermal Hall effect immediately, at least at that very point. Let me also show you on other lattices, there is actually numerical evidence that a small J-chi is sufficient for dramatic things to happen. For example, on the Kagame antiferromagnet, this is the nearest neighbor Kagame antiferromagnet, at J-chi equals zero, you know, we're still arguing about what precisely state it forms. But if you put a small J-chi, and in fact, in this numerical work, as small as 1%, it's enough to give you this chiral spin liquid. There's also on the frustrated triangular lattice, there's a J-chi of, you know, 0.1%. That's enough to drive you into some kind of chiral states. So our assumption is that on the square lattice for the actual physical system is not at this critical point, but it's somewhere nearby. And at this point, just a small, enough, an infinitesimal magnetic field is enough to cause your thermal Hall conductivity to jump to pi over 6, which is 1/2, like I said. Is it pi? Yeah, it's pi over 6. I don't know. Which is 1/2 the value that's measured in the roughly per layer in the Tyfair experiments. All right, so the rest of this now is a relatively simple calculation. What we're going to do is assume that, before I get there. So now this theory now is a theory of fermions, Dirac fermions with a mass. It's one particular mass that gives you the chiral order. But you can also move this way and get to the nail state. And in this theory, the way you get the nail state is by adding a different mass. So in the end, all you have to do is just work out at finite temperature the thermal Hall conductivity of a theory like this with two different Dirac fermion masses. This gamma is some matrix in the Dirac space. So we're going to start with the nail state here. We assume that the real world is here. And what the Tyfair group has done is just gone somewhere close to this boundary, but not across it. Okay. Now, if the only thing effect of the magnetic field was to induce this J-chi term, then I would say I would encourage them strongly to increase the field and they will cross this. But unfortunately, there's also the Zeeman term whose effects I'll describe in a minute. All right. So, in fact, this is it. So, if you include the Zeeman term in this theory, you can work out this kind of phase diagram. So basically now, we're trying to be as close as possible to the experiment. So we are starting here at this point at zero field with the nail state. If you put only an orbital field, we'll eventually go into this state with chiral spin liquid topological order. If you put only a Zeeman term, well, nothing much happens. And if you put both of them, well, then there's a phase boundary which goes like this. And so here are three separate tracks the experiment could be taking, depending on the ratio of the Zeeman term and this J chi term. And I'll show you the results for what the thermal Hall coefficient looks like along these three different lines, and also across this phase boundary. So here's, first let me show you the results across this phase boundary, B. So that's B here. So if you're on the nail side, if you're this, which is where we think the experiments are, if you're on this side, on the pink side, then the thermal Hall effect looks something like this. It rises and then eventually goes down back to zero. And as you get closer and closer to this phase boundary, the thermal Hall effect will go up. And then there's a bifurcation point, roughly halfway between pi over 3 and 0. That's not 1, that's pi over 3. And if you're on the other side, if you're on this side over here, in the pink side, well, then you follow the same trajectory, but then go up to the quantized value. So this is the quantized value that you would get in the Laufland-Kallmeier state. So our claim is that the experiments, which are seeing this large negative term, now the sign here is kind of arbitrary, I'll come back to that towards the end of my talk, are somewhere along this trajectory. So if you took some other material that was not as correlated, then it would go down and have us, you know, just go back down to zero, or even in the lanthanum copper oxide, maybe eventually it's going to come back down to zero. So, you know, that's really the essentially the complete story. And I see I'm going too fast. All right. So for example, so that's right. So this curve here, well, maybe I'm not, I have a lot more to say. So this curve here, so up to some temperature, we claim is possible explanation for this. And now, in fact, I think I put the units here, right? This is the units per layer. It goes down to minus 1. We are only going down to about minus point, well, actually, what is it? Yeah, minus 0.4 or something like that. We can't get anything all the way down, that far down. So that extra, there must, you know, I don't have an answer for why we can't get that. It's just hard for me to imagine any pure spin model giving you such a large thermal Hall conductivity. Okay, we can also look at then the field dependence, which is the other thing they measure. Suppose you scan the field along these directions, C, D, and E. Then this is the kind of plots you get. So this is along the line C. This is how it roughly linear in field with an upward curvature. If you're along the middle line D, and getting fairly close to this critical point, this phase boundary, as you're increasing the field, then this is how the kappa x y increases as a function of field. And then E is almost linear. And you can see, again, that field dependence is rather similar to the field dependence they see in the experiments. Okay. So apart from this factor of 2, all of the other phenomenology seems to really fit what they're saying so far. And you know, and if somehow if someone could figure out a way to turn off the Zeeman coupling, then I think the prospects are bright for a field-induced transition to a topological state, even in the cuprates. Okay. All right. So now let me say a bit more about this new phase transition, and the reason I want to do it, well, for two reasons. One is that turns out there's some very interesting field theories that come out here. And so I'll have to apologize to the experimentalists, which are actually related to advanced, very recent advances, some of it by string theorists strongly coupled field theories in 2+1 dimensions. And they all involve, you know, non-abelian versions of the Kramers Wernier type dualities. But the reason for doing it is, in fact, these dualities are not just toys for theorists. They turn out to be what they tell you is there's many different ways of looking at the same phenomena. And now when you dope, and you want to understand the doped case, it gives you some freedom. You may have, you know, you may choose one of these different ways. They might be easier on how you dope. And one of the things we are finding is that to understand the nail effect in the insulator and to understand the nail effect, the thermal Hall effect in the insulator, the thermal Hall effect in the doped state, we tend to use different theories. All right, so let me tell you a little bit about then the field theory for this critical point. So you can actually just derive it from the theory I told you earlier, which was two species of Dirac fermions with two masses. You can make one of the masses very large and the other mass very small near this phase boundary and integrate out one species of fermions with a heavy mass, and you get this theory. So this is a theory, an SU2 gauge theory, with one Dirac fermion. M is a parameter you tune to go across this phase boundary. So M is positive on one side and negative on the other side. And it's a Chern-Simons term, non-abelian Chern-Simons term at level 1/2. Okay, actually formally minus 1/2. Anyway, so here's a theory that I happen to show Nadi Cyborg, who's an expert at conformal field theories of this site. And he was, and actually also Chenke also pointed out part of this to me earlier. And he got very excited and he said, well, actually, this is exactly the theory I've been working on for mysterious reasons, that this is the SU2 Chern-Simons theory at level minus 1/2 with a fermion doublet. And at very low energies, in fact, this theory has an emergent global SO3 symmetry, which arises from the SO5 symmetry I measured earlier. In fact, in this theory, that's quite explicit. You can just see it. But he said that this theory has not just one, but four different formulations. And the other three are here. Okay, so in the field theory language, these would be, in this case, you have SU2 at level 1 with a relativistic scalar, a boson. Here you have U1 at level 2 with a scalar, and you have U1 at level minus 3/2 with a fermion. All right, that didn't mean much to me, as I expect it doesn't mean much to many of you. But it turns out that all of these four theories also have a condensed matter parent. So this particular theory that I've described appears when you write the spin operator in terms of fermions, so Schwinger fermions, which you can think of also as transforming to a rotating reference frame in pseudo-spin space. So there's an SU2 gauge theory of Schwinger fermions, which gave us this theory that I worked with. There's another SU2 gauge theory of Schwinger bosons, and if you massage that a little bit for this phase transition, you get exactly theory number 2 of Cyborg et al. You can also do flux attachment transformations where you take the spin operator and write it as a boson, and then you attach two quantum fluxes to get the Laughlin-Kalmar state. So that's the composite boson theory, which is essentially what Laughlin-Kalmar used. And if you work with that, you get this other theory. And finally, there's composite fermion, which is the Jain approach, and you get the fourth theory. So at least near this critical point, these different approaches that some of us have been fighting over for so many years are all the same. They're all reduced to very different formulations of the same conformal field theory. All right, so that's really quite interesting that this physical system can realize all these non-abelian gauge theories and this exact duality, which is, you know, just fairly recent. So now my purpose in talking about this, it turns out that this particular theory will turn out to be the most convenient way of thinking about the doped case, whereas this one was the most convenient way of thinking about the insulator. Okay. So that gives us so here are the four theories if you want to see them all written out. All right, so now one of the things we can do, and this is something we're working on, and again, this is something that will be helpful in consideration of the doped case, is to compute the thermal Hall effect with gauge fluctuations. So the theory that I pointed out for this critical point was this one here, which is the SU2 level of 1/2 with one Dirac fermion. That's the theory right here. So you take that theory and you generalize it to level k. In this case, k will be could be integer or half integer, and nf fermions. Okay. And now this particular theory, you can compute the thermal Hall effect in a 1 over nf expansion when k is proportional to nf. And just from the general structure of the theory, you can say that the thermal Hall effect will be 5 minutes left. Okay, kb squared t over h bar, that's the natural units, times a dimensionless function, and that's some universal function of m, the mass m, and the temperature. And so our task is to compute this function. All right. Now, in the limit, when the temperature is much smaller than m, then you go to one of the two phases, and there we know the thermal Hall coefficient exactly. And it's just determined by some pure Trin-Simons theory, which is at level k hat, which is k minus nf over 2 sine of m. So this quantity has to be an integer. But in between, near the critical point, so, oh gosh, this is not working out. Oh, no, that's correct. And this is actually the exact value as m, when your temperature is much smaller than the absolute value of the mass, so you're not near the critical point. Looks like a complicated expression. This is, of course, obtained not from the 1 over nf expansion, but from lots of things we know about topological field theories in 2 plus 1 dimensions and their various anomalies, in particular the gravitational Trin-Simons anomalies. But here I just want, I just want to find out some interesting features of this result and compare it with the computations in the 1 over nf expansion. So the 1 over nf expansion, you know, you just turn the crank and see what you get without worrying about all these fancy anomalies. And what you find is that there's actually a simple interpretation of these two terms. So the first term is of order nf because it goes to infinity as k or nf go to infinity. So it's very large in the nf expansion. And in this case, it's simply the contribution of the fermions. We just took three fermions to describe this phase transition with one of the fermion bands changing sign. You will get exactly this. And the second contribution, which is of order 1, because as k goes to infinity, it's just a pure number, in this case 3 for SU2, that you can view as the contribution of the gauge field fluctuation. So there's really two components to the response. There's the spin-ons, and then there's the gauge field. And the interesting thing is that these two contributions have the opposite sign. So just remember. And that's quite a generic feature of all of these gauge theories coupled to matter in their thermal Hall response. All right. So let me now talk about the pseudogap and non-zero doping in 1 minute left. So that's this behavior here. Here's a few more plots showing you that, you know, at higher temperatures and higher doping, it obeys the Wiedemann-Franz law, but at lower temperatures and lower doping, there's a strong deviation. That's what we want to understand. So you need a model for the pseudogap, and the most convenient model we find is basically where you imagine the pseudogap is made up of fermions that carry electrical charge of density delta, okay? So these are the hole pockets, which you assume form even without magnetic order. And because of that radical assumption, you need a gauge field. So this basically, these are fermions or charge-ons with two possible charges, P, under an internal gauge field and also coupled to the external physical electromagnetic field. All right, so now if I just take this particular theory of just fermions in pockets in a magnetic field, I know what its thermal Hall effect is. For free fermions, it's just given by the Wiedemann-Franz law. You have some weak field Hall conductivity, and then you have the corresponding thermal Hall conductivity. But here, because you are in this pseudogap phase, there is a gauge field. So just like the previous computation, you have a matter field. In this case, the matter fields carry charge. They're charge-ons, not spin-ons. The charge-ons give you the Wiedemann-Franz contribution. And there's a gauge field, which now, again, will give you a contribution that has the opposite sign. So that's really, so that you could try to compute that by integrating out the original fermions and you get some effective action for the gauge field. This is the kind of action you would write down, say, for even for the Halperin-Lee-Reed state. It's related to that in some way. And we are in the process of computing its Hall effect. We haven't got all the details down yet. We'll be pretty confident that we're going to get a contribution with the opposite sign from the fermionic matter. All right, so let me just put up my conclusions. So in the insulator, like I've said, the main conclusion is that there is a chiral spin liquid nearby, And that's enough to give you the observed thermal Hall effect. And when we think about the thermal Hall effect, it really comes has two equally important contributions. One is from some matter fields, spin-ons, and the other is from a gauge field, which have the opposite sign. And in the doped case, we think a similar approach might explain what's being seen, where you get charged matter fields that give you the Wiedemann-Franz law, and a gauge field that gives you a contribution with the opposite sign. Thanks.
Okay, super. The question to the first part of your talk. When you showed two versions of the phase diagram. One was in the spin language, so it has like JK and a vertical axis, and that's why you have Nael, Carl Spill equilibrium.
Right. That was with BZ equals zero.
That's right. Was that a sketch or that was obtained with DMRG or some other technique?
It's a sketch. It's a wild hope.
Very good.
We don't know that. I mean, but what we do know, I should say, sorry, there is one calculation by Sirach's group on exactly this model. They did some tensor network, as you might imagine. And they do have a phase diagram with colors quite consistent with this. They measure the churn number of some spin-ons, and it's quite consistent with this.
Okay. Yeah. And then the second phase diagram that you had just one slide after, I think.
This
is based on the dual theory for which you put some T2.
This is just a computation on mean field computation on this theory like this put on a lattice where you ignore the gauge field.
Okay.
You also add a Zeeman term, which is not shown here. But it's just simply, it's just Schwinger fermions, free Schwinger fermions on the lattice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understood your talk correctly, your analysis is based on 2 plus 1 D field theory?
Of course, yes.
So is that possible this interlayer coupling explains some of the discrepancy?
I don't know. I don't know how it will help. I think Leon has been raising his hand. I want to see what he finds wrong with my talk.
Always enthusiastic for your talks.
Okay.
It's fair to say that the maximum effect would be possible the closest you are to the quantum critical point, right?
Yes, correct. As you can see from this, where's the curve?
I was sure of that answer. So the question is, I think my understanding would be that there's sort of a crossover scale, which sets when you see a substantial amount of cap XY, which is basically temperature of order J chi, because it has scaling dimension 1 and...
It's really set by the vicinity of this phase boundary.
Well, let's suppose I sit exactly at the phase boundary. You had a function, cap XY over T,
yeah.
A function of the...
Well, exactly the phase boundary is just constant. I mean, it goes... Exactly. This part here is you're scaling away from it. Yeah. So, I don't know.
What sets the peak temperature? Is it J chi?
This temperature here.
Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously it becomes slower, closer. You know, it. Let's see.
I thought the critical point is time reversible.
Well, so all of this, it's basically set by M, the mass M.
Yes, which is J chi.
It's the deviation from the critical point, the distance from the critical point.
Sorry, if I take... If I sit at the critical point, I would have thought, and then I turn on J chi, I should get the maximum effect, right?
This critical point is not at J chi equals zero. It's at some other finite J chi. So where do you want to sit?
We turn off Zeeman interaction, right?
You want to sit here?
Yes.
We're not sitting there. We are actually, that critical point is this point here.
Would it not be better to sit there? It would be larger if I sit there, right?
There an infinitesimal field will give you 5/6 immediately.
Will there not be a temperature dependence?
It will start falling off at some field of order J at that point. I mean, it'll be just
J or J chi?
No, it's J.
Critical point has.
Critical
point is time reversal invariant, right? So the conductivity should be zero.
In infinitesimal, it jumps. There's a discontinuity at that point.
At finite temperature, it jumps?
No, at zero temperature, it jumps, right? So then what? Okay.
So then there should be a temperature scale at which it gets of order that...
Well, it gradually come down.
On what's...
Okay, I have to think about it. All right, well, anyway, we're not at that point. We're over here, right?
Where the effect is smaller.
Yes, well, right, okay.
Let somebody else answer.
It's certainly, the whole, over here, it's a function of M over T, and everything else, where M is the distance from the critical point, and everything else is just set by J. Okay, let me think about it, yes.
Slight follow-up on that question.
Yes, yeah.
So how big is J2 usually estimated in the group rates?
It's not large enough. It's like 0.1 or 0.2 or something like that.
So,
right.
Yeah, I think so. So then you would actually be quite far in the near state. And
well, that's why I've optimistically assumed that the scaling dimension says that this comes in flat. So in fact, there is good reason for assuming that the scaling dimension is greater than, I mean, in the fermionic theory, the scaling dimension of M is 1, where the scaling dimension in this direction is actually negative. So it's quite possible that this scaling dimension is much larger than this one. So that's why I've drawn it flat. Yes.
And
we don't know these numbers.
And in experiment,
yeah.
Do you know why they picked these particular values at which they measured thermal Hall, like the particular values of doping? For which reason did they pick these two or three
data? I have no idea. I mean, I think it may have to do with samples that they have available. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know.
So these terms in the chiral terms that you wrote down, I can think of it as, you know, in Hubbard type model.
Right.
One of a U expansions at the
correct. Well, you need a B field. It'll depend on B. It's zero at when B is equal to zero.
In finite magnetic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yes. And so from that point of view, materials with, you know, smaller U, right?
Yeah.
In some sense, would have
sure.
a bigger effect.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing in the doped case. In the doped case, you know, we don't have to worry about these chiral terms because they just the actual spinons there, the matter fields that carry charge. So roughly speaking, when we integrate out these fermions in the presence of a magnetic field and look at the effective action for the gauge field, we're doing almost exactly the same thing. Instead of getting the J chi term, we get a Chern-Simons term for the gauge field. But it's the same process where we're just integrating out. Well, in this case, we don't even have the upper Hubbard band, but you could put it in, it'll give you those contributions. Yeah. Ultimately, just comes from the chiral space factor of the actual electrons, right?
Experimentalist question now.
Yes, please.
How do you independently vary the orbital magnetic field and the... I don't understand where these different paths that you drew...
Those are theorist paths.
Okay.
So you as experimentalists, you'll go along
one
of those.
You're stuck with one of them.
Yes, you're stuck with one of them.
And do you know which one?
You know, I mean, naively, you would say probably the flattest one, because the J chi that you induced, the most vertical one, because J chi introduced is very small. But we are assuming
How do you know that? How do you know that the J chi is small?
If you just compute it perturbatively,
uh-huh.
You get this factor of T cubed over U squared in uh-huh. front of it. So the estimates is like as small as 10 to the minus 3 at these fields. But...
Okay.
This is what we have to work with.
Yeah,
you give me a better idea.
Right. I'll work on it.
But like I said, we were also very surprised to see that J chi even smaller than that was sufficient on the triangular lattice to give you a huge effect. Okay, so, but Leon says that effect will immediately disappear. I don't think so. But okay, as a function of temperature.
So just a comment.
Yes.
Regarding the J chi, depending on the problems that you're working on,
yeah.
you don't have to put it by hand. So in some cases,
correct.
If you apply the field,
yeah.
that term just
If you have charge fluctuation, it'll pop out. That's kind of what we do in the second part of it.
Charge fluctuation. If you have even spin models with some frustrations, you can just induce them, and they just sometimes they just become.
But how does the field couple to the spin model?
Because it's a spin model, so you couple to the Gemanton HDRS.
Oh, and so I think you need both.
And then you compute well, it, and you will have this scalar chirality terms, which does jumps at some point.
Not, but the Zeeman term by itself not enough. If you can get the combination of Zeeman and
on the Heisenberg interaction. So if you have interactions which are very frustrating, for example,
you need Gilosinski-Maria. The combination of Zeeman and Gilosinski.
Like a gamma interactions, for example, in the honeycomb analysis.
Yes, that's fine.
And you put the field with the
I agree.
Interaction, you can get the chirality which jumps and become very large.
I agree with the gamma interaction because the chi term also breaks reflection symmetry with the Zeeman doesn't. So you need the gamma term or something like that.
No, gamma term is not breaking any of it. But anyway, there is a way to do that. So you don't have to put it by hand. And so that J chi will be a function of the B field in the reality. You can make them large.
Okay. I would say certainly I know that with the combination of Jalosinski-Maria and Zeeman is enough. But right. But I don't think Zeeman by itself is enough. You need something beyond Heisenberg. Yeah, right.
Okay, unfortunately, that time is up. Okay, last question.
Yeah.
So by charge fluctuation, I guess you mean that the term has the same symmetry as the current, exactly the same symmetry.
Yes, that's right.
So I can linearly couple to the current.
Yes, yeah.
Break time reversal and inversion.
Yeah, what it breaks is time reversal inversion, but not the product. You have to preserve inversion times time reversal. That's just anything with a combination of those will do it.
Okay, so let's thank the speaker again. Now we have coffee break and let's restart at 3:50.